Broadcasting 2.0 for September 11th, 2020. This is episode number 2, and we have liftoff! Woo, yeah! And despite the rumors that he is just an AI that I control secretly through a Twitter API, he's alive, Dave Jones, in Alabama. Hey, Dave.
Alive but tired.
You must be wiped, buddy.
Yeah, it's been a crazy week. Let's let's just agree to that. It's been crazy.
We have now. I don't think we've actually spoken on the. Well, we had a call. What, Monday? I think on Labor Day.
Barely talked. Yeah, we barely talked this week.
It's been email. It's been instant message, and we have not spoken. So everything you're hearing here on Podcasting 2.0 is it is the corporate meeting.
it's
the board meeting right here.
You're doing minutes, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's called show notes. We've just changed that. Yes. Let me see. I think the best place to pick it up is from the last episode where we were planning on launching. A lot of things happened really quickly after we recorded that initial podcast, which I think was August 28th. And I do want to say it feels weird to do a show on September 11th because, you know, you're supposed to do all kinds of patriotic shows. Actually this is one of the most patriotic things we could do because we are, after all, going for a platform of free speech. Which is,
it's funny. I've got a buddy. We have a long running text chain, and I did not know until this morning that he's originally from Indiana, but spent some time in Boston. And he said he texted our thread and was telling this story about how he was interviewed by the FBI after 9/11 because he had inadvertently talked to one of the terrorists on the train morning of. Yeah, and he was like, it was surreal. I mean,
wow.
He didn't say a whole lot more about it, but he evidently had contact it was either the morning of or the day before, and he had no idea. And then his mother saw the guy on one of the mugshots on TV, and he was like, "That's the guy."
Man.
And he got a visit from the FBI and all this stuff. He's like, "Well, man, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I just we're just chit chatting or whatever." But yeah, it was crazy.
Well, that means that you're on a list somewhere too. You with your endless text.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. Yeah,
you're on the list. Yeah. You're on the list, man.
I'm 12 levels deep in the on some linkage to linkage to linkage.
So we got kind of a surprise after we had recorded episode number one, and that was Joe Rogan, who texted me and said, "Bro, you got to be the first person on the podcast in the new studio." And so I knew that I would be talking about Podcast Index, which actually, eventually I got it out.
Yeah, that was an interesting show. That was an interesting show, man.
Yeah.
I could tell that was a slow-mo show.
Well, and by the way, if anyone heard the audio, please note that there was some transcoding error from 48 kilohertz to 44.1. And I sounded like I had cotton mouth and I was slurring.
Is that what that is?
Yes.
I kept thinking, Adam never has a list or anything.
No. If you put it at 1x2 speed, it's normal. Then it's right back. Now, I don't know Joe's voice that well. I mean, I know it, of course. And his doesn't change that much. It's so slight. But for me, it was literally just this. I'm like, what? I know we were lit, but not like that. No.
You had a hair lip.
Even Tina, the keeper, my wife, she's like, "What's wrong? I've never heard you like that." And she knows I'm a pothead, but no. It was something. It was a technical thing. It sucked. That's the part that bothered me the most. Everything else I could live with, but let's make it sound like that. Oh, well, I knew it. Those guys had a lot of technical shit to deal with. So,
I mean, they put that whole studio together in a week.
Yeah, a couple, 3 weeks. But yeah, they did.
All the audio stuff.
Yeah, and it's just a temporary studio. He's building something outrageous.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that, but that's okay. Now, of course, it did spark a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. A lot of people started showing up with questions. I made the mistake of not yet installing a filter on info@podcastindex.org. So what is all this email I got? I got to segregate it out. The response to me Now we have different responsibilities, and I'm, you know, if anything, I'm driving the outward force and getting the word out, talking to developers, and users, at a level that, that I, at least I can go to, passing anything off, or Dave, you're grabbing stuff that is technical in nature. What I saw was incredible enthusiasm. Yeah. I would say a large percentage of people who contacted us saying, oh man, I've been waiting for something like this. This is so needed. I wrote a white paper. I've been collecting feeds. I mean, everyone has been doing some, and it feels like to me a little ripple of boost kind of went through the whole industry in a way. Something's happening. Oh, wait a minute. So this might be something. Oh, maybe this will be good. Feels like kind of people were waiting for something, or were hoping, or maybe just felt a little despair. What was your impression?
Yeah, I think I felt that too. There, a lot of people, like from the, I had emails from people that either, it was kind of like they were one of two camps. They either got it like right off the bat, they got the whole point, or they just didn't, like, they didn't get it at all. Yeah, I mean, there was very little of like, what exactly are y'all trying to do? I mean, right. It was more like this, you know, this is sort of irrelevant. You know, why are you even bothering? Or I'm 100% on board, both feet in. And I think that some of the confusion maybe around some of that may come from just not understanding what this thing is. This is not a product that we ran off and built. This is not a Silicon Valley product launch where we ran off and built this product with a team of 10 dudes over the course of 6 months. And now we're going to quote unquote launch. That's not what this is. I mean, this is not the launch of a product. It's like the opening of a project. And the goal of the project is to be a central directory initially for developers to be able to have a directory that's, you know, open and free that they can depend on. I mean, that's the beginning of it. I mean, consider that I committed the first code of this project like on August the 6th. So that's how fast this happened. Okay. And it was helped by, you know, like we said on the last episode, 10 years of development, aggregator development, with our other project. But so I was able to lift and drop a lot of code in there. So it got off the ground quick. But I mean, if you look at the project now, I mean, the email confirmations that you get for verification look like crap. You know, the UI is sketchy in places. I saw it on Safari last night and there was something that was out of whack.
And just let me interject for a second. Part of the whole idea of this project is if you have skills and you can fix whatever Dave just said,
yes,
help us. That's exactly what we want. I've got web developers showing up saying, well, I've got these skills. Hey, man, jump in, do whatever you can, feed it back to it. And you'll have to tell me, Dave, is GitHub the best place to do that? Or,
oh, yeah. We're rolling a bunch of stuff on GitHub, yeah.
Yeah, because we love that. We got comic strip blogger who created 18,000 lines of code for every scripting platform imaginable.
Yeah,
big up to Pod News, by the way.
James Cridley, is awesome.
Who definitely got the as you said, Dave, the squishiest launch ever, which is true because it's not really a launch; it's a project opening. They really helped, and I'm really appreciative of that. And they integrated almost right away. We got interop with them on their search.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Okay, so I interrupted you. I just wanted to make sure that people understand that's the whole idea here is help out, jump in.
Yes. I mean, James over at Pod News has been fantastic. He's, you know, he sent us that article. He had written about this very topic before. And a couple of years ago. And so when he saw what we were doing and heard what we were doing, it was like instant synergy.
Right.
And so he said, yeah, I'm on board. I mean, he was on board. He was pinging our search like, like 3 days before we even, had a product out on, or excuse me, a site up. So he was like, he was early in, and also the guys at Transistor.fm.
Yeah,
they jumped on board. A lot of folks, I mean, just too many to mention, have just sent us an email and said this is great. And all those guys, I just like started redirecting over to GitHub, and we're throwing repositories up on GitHub as fast as we can. And those guys, they're starting to moderate the projects themselves. And it's cool. Yeah. And I'm going to go, especially the documentation. There's a lot of API help that they have. They're editing the API docs. So I'm going to be putting up pieces of aggregator code probably today, just to let people see that. Cause I think we're going to talk about the aggregator some. And it's been great. It's been very busy, but great.
If you're listening to this and your eyes are starting to glaze over, don't worry. That's because you're probably just interested in what the future could be of podcasting, what we're trying to do. That goes along with, although it hasn't been that much, but people saying, hey, I just want to make sure I'm in your index. And these are obviously users and also people who say, hey, I'm a fan of the show. Can you make sure it's in the index? That is exactly the point. We want to be able for everybody to submit their favorite podcast feed to the index. And there's all kinds of things that we have to look at for that. The feedback has been invaluable. We also think it should happen at the app level or the player level. You know, that's where you should be able to do these things. Will we have a submission? Of course. But when I see stuff showing up like on noagendasocial.com, which, you know, it's just a Mastodon account, I guess it will work on a federated server if you toot at podcast and then I think you can even add from there now, can't you? You can add a feed to the index just by sending a Mastodon toot.
I don't know. I haven't looked today.
Yeah, I think
so. Did he put add in there?
Yeah,
that would be great.
I think so. I'll check it.
Yeah, it's like do you have to toot at podcast at noagendasocial, or is it just all across?
I think it's podcast at noagendasocial.com if you're not on our server. You know, so that's how you do it federated. Let me just see what the here's podcast. So we can do toot at podcast add and then your XML feed to submit a podcast RSS feed. So it's already in there.
That's crazy. So you can add and this is the perfect example of the stuff. So if you imagine a podcast directory or a podcast index, if you just say those words to somebody, what they envision immediately is a website that you go to that you search for a podcast and it brings back results. Okay. There's some of that out there already. I mean, that's not a compelling thing that the quote unquote world needs. What the world needs is that, but focused on the piping.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, like immediately within like a day, I think it was a Jeff over on No Agenda Social had written this bot.
Yeah.
That now it's using our API to subscribe to and add feeds to the index through toots on Mastodon. I mean, it's like we had actually talked about that and he did it in like an hour. It was awesome. So like that's the perfect example of stuff that like we roll out this thing, and as long as it's free and open and accessible, everybody just comes out of the woodworks and does crazy stuff.
And that's exactly what I could not have hoped for a better start to this by seeing the creativity, because that's really what we need. I mean, we have ideas, we have lots of thoughts. We'll talk about a few of them today, but really the creativity, I'm presuming that there is creativity in abundance amongst the development community who have worked with podcasts. And once you get your mindset a little bit out of, okay, this is Overcast or, by the way, which has a lot of great features, or this is the Apple Podcast app, what can you do? I mean, can you make something customized? Can you make something that features the ones that you like or the ones that mm-hmm. your users of your app like? I mean, there's so many different things, subscription lists, sharing, comparison. We've got machine learning people in, AI people in. I'm on a different, I'm going to try this, Dave. So I'm going to do at podcast at no agenda. I'm on a different instance, noagendasocial.com.
And you're on a federated instance.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm on a federated instance. Let's see if it works across federation. I don't see why it wouldn't. Let me see if I've addressed that properly. Let's see if it comes back. It takes a second, usually. Okay, so far, nothing.
excitement.
Yes, we're working on it.
Yeah, that's, you know, that I wonder how much they regulate bots across Federation.
That I don't know. That's a good question. I really don't know.
There's some instances out there that don't, they're like no bots at all. They just ban them, you know. Yeah. I think Mastodon.online is that way. If you're a bot, you get immediately, you know, immediately squashed. I wonder, there may be something like that. We'll have to ask Jeff about it.
Okay, let me just check and see. I got one. Let me see. Let's see if it worked. If it came through. I may not have addressed it properly.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I don't know how this works, but the podcast bot returned, thank you for your courage.
Awesome. I don't know. Something happened, but you don't know what it was.
Stop with the AI already. Yeah. Well, we'll have to figure out what that is. That's very hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah, we need some more descriptive search results there, Jeff.
All right, so there's a couple of here. I want to bring up one, I think, meta issue that has been brought up several times. And this is, I would call it, since we're talking about Mastodon, the Mastodon issue with the app stores. As we know, Google Play has either has started or is or has completed removing any app that connects to a Mastodon server. And they use the developer terms of service guidelines to do this by saying you have created an app that could potentially connect to servers that contain hate speech. And they're being removed for that reason. The obvious counter argument is, oh, well, what about a browser? You can also get different browsers, and those have not been taken down. And I've seen an actual concern among some developers that Apple may go the same way. And it is in their terms of service. There is some language for the app developer that insinuates, here, let me see. I brought up this page earlier. It's under, is it under safety? User-generated content. Apps with user-generated content present particular challenges ranging from intellectual property infringement to anonymous bullying. To prevent abuse, apps with user-generated content or social networking services must include a method for filtering objectionable material from being posted to the app, a mechanism to report offensive content and timely responses to concerns, the ability to block abusive users from the service, and publish contact information so users can easily reach you. So, I think, and there's a lot of, you know, they go into children, and there's just a lot of stuff in there that I just can be used at any time. Will they? I don't know.
Right.
Personally, the way I feel about this is, it's almost the best thing that could happen if they started throwing podcast apps out, because they connect to an index that might potentially lead you to harmful bullying content, which we here just think speech is speech. Right. There's a constitutional limitation. That's where we draw the line.
Right.
Because that could actually cause enough pushback to change those rules. I think that pushback is very, very possible. It may never happen. I don't know. We also have been thinking about solutions on our end that we can offer. You care to address?
On which aspect of that?
Just purely if there's a threat to do we have a way that people can? I mean, is it simple for an app to say, okay, I have an issue, I need to remove this or not surface this? What do you do as a developer? Forget the philosophical part. How about the technical part?
Yeah, on the technical part, there's no API for this yet, but there will be a API for it that'll basically just filter. So you can say it will be something similar to this. I register with my API key, I register a set of feed IDs or feed URLs that I just basically ban from my API results. You can say at any, you know, if, let's just say you're the guy that doesn't want Alex Jones showing up in your feed searches for your user base of your app. Well, you just register the filter, and that doesn't appear anymore. Very similar to the way Mastodon works, where you can moderators of a server can say we don't want to federate with this other server. Oh, that's fine. So it will be something like that. And now currently there is a text string in one of the API calls, and there will be more of this as well, where you can just say exclude anything with these strings in it. And the reason I put that in there was because there's so many Godcasts out there that it was like dominating the carousel on the front page. So I had to put in like, okay, give me these results.
You did not AI God down, did you?
I did.
Oh,
I
my
did.
Goodness.
I did. I'm sorry, but I had to keep sermon audio off the front page because
they an episode a minute.
Yes. Yes. It was too much. I was like, okay, all right, no sermon audio.
But just that, Dave, that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like to be able to, because we had a carousel. That was one of our first test apps. Just have a carousel of the most recently updated podcast. The idea that you can solve that issue, that exception, of which in the RSS world, in my opinion, there are thousands, with a simple added string to your call. That's perfect. That solves so many problems, I think.
Well, the newest API call that I added before the aggregator gave me hell was its recent feeds. So it's essentially the fire hose,
right?
So if you had an app, you know, you had recent episodes was there already, and that's where we get the carousel from. But the recent feeds is the same thing, but it just tells you which feeds have updated. So you can just monitor that. And if you see if the feed ID or the feed URL is one that you don't want to handle, just, you know, ignore it.
Right.
So that, you know, there's that type of thing where it's simple. If you're returning all this data with every call, it's very simple to just ignore the things you don't like too. So, you know, I mean, clearly there are limits, like you said earlier, where, you know, they're going to be, things that just violate law that have to be considered. But, you know, if you're just talking about things that your preferences, you're free to do it whatever you want. I mean, we're just giving the whole thing to you, and then you can just slice it and dice it however you like.
Which brings up another question that surfaced in different variations. So if I look right now on the podcast index, and I search for No Agenda, well, there's a lot of No Agenda podcasts, or at least a lot of podcasts that have No Agenda in the name. The result ranking, is that just alphabetically? Is that something that pops up as by, you know, feed most recently updated? I don't know exactly what we're returning on the search, but the obvious question is, well, what about pirated feeds and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's something that I would like to solve with the whole community. You know, me and you both have ideas, and we talked about it maybe a week ago. I don't remember, but we both have ideas, and it would be, and I think they're good, but I think really this needs to be a community discussion of how to solve this problem, because that, I don't know how many emails you got, but I got quite a few and that were saying, how do you solve the fraudulent feed issue?
Right.
You know, and that issue being, if I'm explaining this correctly, somebody clones your feed and then just starts to stick ads in it.
Joe Rogan gave me an example, although it's not a feed example. When they were doing the Joe Rogan Experience live, streaming live to YouTube, they would, by the time they finished the show, there would already be clips up on YouTube on other people's channels monetizing his clips. And so that's why they stopped streaming live, so that they could have some control over that. In this case, as a creator, there's a couple things I'd be looking for. So first of all, discoverability and how do I surface? So if I'm the No Agenda Show podcast and someone searches for No Agenda, I have some personal responsibility to make sure that my description, my art, my titles, all of that clearly shows what I am. But if there's something that is a clone feed, and usually those are not necessarily one-for-one clones, but they're out there for sure. Mm-hmm. I would just, I mean, to me, in 99.9% of all cases, I'd be like, great, my show's out there in more places. That's fine. I really don't care that much. The minute someone starts to make money off of it by, I guess, connecting to PodTrack or one of these other services, an ad service, all I would really need to know is, okay, how do I go address that with either the person who made the feed, which would, I guess, is not much more than an email contact, which may go nowhere. And ultimately, I think it's also my responsibility to go and track that down if there's some violation. You know, we can't always be counting on a third party to do all this shit for you. And I know that you and I certainly don't want to be doing that. We don't want to have to figure out who's doing what to someone else's feed. But in this open world, you're right, it's a community problem that we need to solve. And I think it depends on what's going on. But you have to kind of take some responsibility. You can't just say, well, someone put it out there and then you take care of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't. Like the delisting thing.
Yeah, I don't want to delist. This is what you and I talked about. We really don't want to delist. I'd rather you go after somebody and their feed stops, so you get them to delist.
Well, I was thinking about that this morning. I was listening to on the way to work. I was listening to a podcast called The Bible Project, which is great, and they mentioned on there something about Luke Skywalker. They were talking about Star Wars or reference or something like that. And so in between these two clips, or in between these two segments of the show, they wove in like a piece of music from the Star Wars soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And it was so well done. They got good editors on that show. It was so well done, and it was great. But I was thinking, as soon as I heard that, though, it was actually quite a long piece of music. It was maybe, I don't know, 30 seconds or so. And I was thinking, you know, if this show was on YouTube, that would have been DMCA'd by their algorithm immediately.
Yeah.
Because it's going to trigger something. But because it's a podcast and it's coming in from the decentralized distributed internet, you can't stop it. It's just there. There's no central place where it gets demonetized or delisted. So as long as it's a feed and it exists somewhere, you can subscribe to it and you can listen to it. And so that is the whole idea. So we don't want to get into the delisting game, because that's just not, like, that's antithetical to everything we're doing.
And to take it even further, as I've learned from some of the people who've reached out, the delisting game is in podcasting is becoming gross. And here's what I've learned. Really? Yeah. So most hosts these days, where you get, you know, half a gig, whatever, do your podcast, they got the WordPress plugin, all that stuff. They will also help you submit your feed. So if you want to submit your feed to everything all in one go, and we already have a couple of podcast hosts who are now integrating with the index, so that'll be an automatic submit to us as well. When it comes to Spotify, this is crazy. When it comes to Spotify, they force the podcast host to host that file from their server. So you can't, you know, upload it somewhere else where you might have, some unlimited space or, you know, just a different service and hand off an enclosure URL. That is not accepted by Spotify in this case. Huh. And the reason why is they reserve the right to remove an episode which goes all the way downstream to the podcast host. Believe it or not, they remove it from their server.
Oh, so if I'm, so what you're saying is if I'm Libsyn, mm-hmm. is that how you say that? then I have to host the MP3s at my house on my domain. I can't.
At Libsyn. They have to be at Libsyn. Yes, they have to be at Libsyn. Yeah.
And or else you.
And I don't know if Libsyn has a deal. I don't. I have no idea. We're just using that as an example.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So Spotify finds something offensive, they send a ping back to the host, and those guys got to take it off the server.
Wow. Okay. that is kind of crazy.
I'm not even sure why.
Huh. I mean, but well, they're not. That's weird. I wonder why they would do that, because they're not putting ads in or anything. Right?
Someone will let us know. It's not about ads. Okay. It's about the removal, and it's at an episode basis, the way I understand it. So,
oh, maybe it's I guess it's probably got to do with the larger ad safety of the context. Yeah.
So I think I tried to bring this to Joe Rogan's attention. I want to reiterate it. Maybe we've already done this. It's like now it's an old story for me. Having
brand safety, not ads. I'm sorry.
Right. Brand safety. Having something outside of the safe zone, whatever it is completely analogous to America Online. AOL was a closed system. AOL people loved. They had message boards. They had chats. You had all kinds of stuff you could do. And as the internet grew outside around it, people started saying, I want to see that. Can you? We want a browser. Give us access to the internet. And they relented. It took a long time. It must have taken a year and a half. They relented. Okay. You click on this button. Well, you got to confirm. You know, it's dangerous out there. It's really scary. And then once they opened that portal and people could go get all the quote unquote fun stuff, it was over. And they became a dial-up service. They literally became a dial-up service within a few years. And it's because people always want what's on the dangerous side. And it ain't all that dangerous when you're just browsing around, you're in your house. So
as soon as you get the warning, you're like, yeah,
yeah, that's good, the thing stuff. I want. Good stuff. Exactly. We used to say in the music business, kids will beg, borrow, steal. They'll do anything they can to get that record. They got to have that album. Got to have it. They'll do anything back in the day. Pre-internet. Yeah. You did everything you could. And so I think that still holds today. That's why, you know, kids today, and when I say kids, I'm talking millennials, 20, 30, even younger, although they're not in my life anymore, younger kids. They know what Tor is. They're like, hey, I'm on the deep web, Dad. Look at this shit I found Tor. Over here. Yeah, they know what Tor is. Yeah, they don't know exactly how it works, but you want to go on the dark web, you get your Tor, and you fire that
Tor.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's the level, which is understandable. It's understandable. So we're going to have apps connected to the index and what is available and the functions from the index that I think will be very, very popular. It may be an HTML5 app.
That's great. That'd be fantastic. HTML5 apps are you can't delist them. They just exist.
Exactly.
You know? And there's no app store.
I already saw one developer check in. I think she said, I think that she was going to start working on it. Let me see if I can see who that is. While I'm looking through these emails, thank you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and I'm not quite sure how, typically with a value for value podcast, we thank all individual donors who supported the podcast under our value for value model. We don't really need the podcast sponsored. We need the entire index supported by the community. I was blown away. I was blown away. We even got a $1,000 donation, and several $100, $5, $10, $50. I mean, we have our bandwidth covered for at least a little bit in our servers, and it's so appreciated. And also the notes that people were sending with, it's just, I don't know if we want to, credit those people. Not everybody may want that. So if it's okay, or if it, let's put it this way, if it's not okay to talk about your support, put that in the note as you do it. Because from time to time, I just want to reference people. You know, incredibly, incredibly kind. And yeah,
if you donate and you don't want to be mentioned on the show, put that in there. Because, I mean, otherwise, we'd love to say your name because you're awesome. And, like, I know... I mean, our hosting fees right now are right about $200 a month, and that's going to go up. Clearly, we probably need about three more servers, and I'm holding off on that. Yeah,
tell me a bit about the infrastructure. Where are we at, and how's everything working? Because, you know, we knew that we were going to get a lot of. I mean, you basically were heads down for a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, just making sure that we were ready for something we didn't know what would be coming, other than people, curious people, but how many, we don't know.
I'm going to put all this stuff up on GitHub in time as I'm able to, but like a diagram of the way the architecture is. But I mean, from a simple perspective, it's, you know, we've got a couple database servers that are hosting everything. In front of that is an Nginx server that is running the front end for the API. Behind that is PHP FPM, which is dialed in to talk to the database servers. Now, for search, we're using a thing called Sphinx. So we have a Sphinx server that indexes the news feeds table about every 15 minutes. Then hanging off of that is there's currently five aggregators that are running nonstop, and they split up the workload between feeds that have updated within the last 3 days, 7 days, I think it's 14 days, 30, and 60. I forgot the exact breakdown, but basically we're trying to say, okay, this aggregator is looking at stuff that updates frequently. This one's looking at stuff that's a little bit older. And so that way we're spreading a million plus feeds across multiple aggregators. And that's one of the servers we'll have to add. We'll probably need, you know, a couple more, at least. And that's on top of the web sub stuff that I'm working on right now.
So, one question. So when you say you're spinning up these servers, what size are you spinning up? You're not setting up, you know, 20 core.
No. Yeah, the database servers are beefy.
Yeah,
they have horsepower, but the aggregators are all this is hosted on Linode, and Linode is fantastic. Now we're not.
Now tell me about the difference between Linode and anything else. Why'd you choose that?
Well, I've had my personal stuff there for a while, and what I like about it is the pricing is predictable.
I've not told you about the latest AWS bill I got.
Oh no, is it bad?
Oh my god, I don't want to tell you about it because I don't want you to have to think about it. that's for no agenda stuff. That's personal. That's different. You know, we got search engine guys scanning my directory, and I had a chat with a couple of them.
Yeah,
we're like, scan a little less, bro.
You gave me too much to think about. All right.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that.
See, that's what we're trying to avoid.
Like, I know. It's exactly what we want to avoid, precisely.
Because AWS can kill you, because it's not the
transaction, right?
You get dinged for the transaction. You get dinged for transactions, for requests.
Yeah,
it's all the stuff that get all the auxiliary stuff. So you may, if you have a low volume server on Linode, you may end up paying a little bit more. But you know you're always going to pay no more than this, which is like it just lets you sleep at night. So that's why we chose it. And so we can just spin up, like with the aggregators, we can just clone new ones, and they're running on, like, you know, single core, you know, two gig instances. They're just small because all they're doing is just pulling and parsing feeds all day and then feeding them back into the database.
Right.
And then we've got. Then we got the WWWF sort of front end, you know, server on in there, and is that it? I think there may be something else, but that's roughly where we're at right now.
So
on the infrastructure,
I was just looking at the $1,000 donation. I'll just use his first name because this is a good way to get our attention, obviously, and to send off some information. So Brian sent donated $1,000, and I cannot thank you enough, Brian. And he said, very happy to support this project. Think there can be a bunch of ways of building value using blockchain tech. If you're ever interested in moving that direction, let me know. Yeah, the two things that popped up regarding that was IPFS, the interplanetary filing system, and distributed hash tables, blockchain. There's a lot of thinking and a lot of wishing, for sure. And we've always had this in our minds. Really, just they make the index really, really distributed.
What have you got and what have you heard?
Yeah,
same thing. IPFS is definitely going to have to be something we do.
Now, we've been using that. It's already integrated into the Freedom Controller.
Yeah. We know how to use it on sort of a simple level where we're just, you know, you're just posting things, posting OPML files is what we've been doing, and then just getting back an IPFS hash. And so if we could take that and
can't we just use the Cloudflare node?
Do they have an IPFS?
Yeah. I think it's ipfs.cloudflare.com. I think.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, ipfs.cloudflare.
Yeah, because we're using Cloudflare as our caching reverse proxy already, which has been great too. Those guys are good.
Let's see, IPFS gateway. Here you go.
Oh, wonderful.
Cloudflare's read only. Distributed web gateway lets you access content stored on the interplanetary file system quickly and easily without downloading any special software.
Well, I don't know. Did you see that Chrome, the Chromium project has put the IPFS protocol scheme like?
Oh, it doesn't surprise me. No, I haven't. I use Dissenter. I'm still using Dissenter. Okay. I like it so much. Yeah, cloudflare-ipfs.com.
Oh, okay.
What, are you on a boat?
No, I'm not sure exactly what just passed by, but it was very loud. It's kind of scary.
The love boat. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, I'm floating on my houseboat as we talk. That's great.
Hey, this is interesting. Simplify, speed up, and secure access to both the Ethereum network and the interplanetary file systems. I didn't know that.
That's on Cloudflare too.
Yeah. So do those kind of work together? Is that?
Well, somebody was talking about smart contracts.
Oh, well, that makes total sense. I mean, that's stuff we want to get into for sure. I would say if you're an IPFS developer, jump in.
Reach out or just get on the GitHub or something, like get involved, because that's absolutely something we want to do.
Yeah, I think the GitHub is the place to go. I mean, the email is just going to be so poor.
What are you supposed to do through email anyway? I mean, like all you can do is set up something and then push it off to some other location like GitHub. So when it comes to code, I mean, probably the GitHub is where to go. And I mean, shoot us an email. Definitely let us know that, you know, what you got. But I mean, really just jump in and start doing stuff. It's fine. Just start posting code and do whatever. And hopefully I will be able to help that by starting to push up code. I've just got to take the code as it stands and split stuff out and just start putting those segments up on the GitHub repository so people can see it and sort of get understanding of the way the backend works, which is something else. I know, you know, we definitely want to post the whole index as a download. And initially that'll probably be on archive.org unless somebody else has a better, big file download location.
Yeah. What's the size now of that thing? What size are we looking at?
Well, if you don't include the episodes, then it's manageable. I mean, it's, you know, 4 gigs. If you include the episodes, you're pushing, you know, 30, 35. So that, I guess we'll have to decide. Maybe initially we'll just push the feed list.
Right.
And, you know, and then, talk about, or maybe as two separate downloads, feed list as one download and episodes as another. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, depends on how much. I don't want to kill our bandwidth. You know?
Yeah. Cause just that alone could be, reasonably cost.
Pushing a 35,
pushing
gig
35
file.
Gigs out can cost you money. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's more just like, it's going to hog everything up.
So. Well, there you go. There's our instant IPFS application.
Yeah.
That should be IPFS.
File. Yeah.
Am I crazy? Does that make sense?
I've not sent anything that big over IPFS. Is it able to handle stuff like that?
You're asking me?
Yes. You're the IPFS expert.
Sure.
You knew that Cloudflare had one, therefore you're the expert.
Well, this also seems like a torrent project. I mean, that's what torrent was made for, you know, that kind of stuff. All of this has been solved. This is what I love so much about this project. So many of these issues have been solved. We just, you know, and I was doing the same, and I was sitting around bitching like, well, so we need to have something decentralized, man, something that's not, man, then those guys, we got to do it.
You sounded just like that, too.
I know.
It's uncanny. That's why you just sat in your house and did that all the time.
Uncanny what I was doing. Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, here we are. We just said, screw it. Let's get it started.
There's a couple. Let's see, Bo Fisher emailed, and he had a few questions, and these are sort of representative of a lot of questions. And he said, like, any plans for a Discord channel? No, that's not. It's just too. I can't handle real time right now. What are your infrastructure plans? We talked about the Linode. We actually do have some. We have a few spot instances in AWS because those are dirt cheap. I don't know if you know how spot instances work, but you can.
Yeah, you spin them up and down as you need them, I guess.
Well, you bid on time. And so you can say, I'm willing to pay, let's say, 0.04 cents per hour for this workload. And whenever their auction price level hits that mark, it'll spin your instance up and run until it goes above that rate again, and then it'll stop.
Right.
So we're doing that for like crawling and that kind of thing. So we do have a few servers over there, but that's like cheap. Looks like exposed APIs are REST, HTTP. Yeah. So the API stuff, there's a lot of stuff going on GitHub with that. And a lot of talk around the API as it stands now not being quote unquote RESTful, meaning that it's not returning, it's not compliant with what you would call a fully RESTful spec. So it's not returning HTTP status codes, and the endpoints are not exactly what you would want. It's more, this is a very simplified quote unquote REST API that we have right now. And it's really just, it's V1, it's 1.0 in the URL for a reason. It's because it needed to be something simple that everybody could just kind of jump in and not have to have a full blown RESTful client ready to go to handle it.
Right.
So, And the way we talked about it on the GitHub the other day was, what would be best is if those guys are going to help design sort of a 1.1 or a 2.0 API spec for the more robust RESTful API, and then the 1.0 spec will stick around for, you know, forever possibly, just to have sort of a lightweight spec and a heavyweight spec to give each group whatever they need. Because if you're just doing something with... If you're doing something simple with an HTML5 app, you may not be able to handle that full, or just maybe too much,
right,
to handle like a full blown,
full blast
REST client. Yeah.
The whole
load. So you may just want something simple. Yeah. 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 So you may want something more simple. So I think that's kind of where we're aiming at on that.
I'm going to give you the whole load today.
Oh God, please don't. How will you separate and maintain independence? So that Amazon, Cloudflare, blah, 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 can't shut the project down. I mean, I'm not really worried about that. I mean, another reason why we picked Linode, is because a lot of podcast projects are hosted there from what I can tell already. And, I mean, if that ever becomes an issue, I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get there, but I'm not too worried about that. And, the emails the emails look like crap. So, if anybody's really good at email templates, shoot them to me, because that's the other thing. The UI design. Yeah, we got one piece of hate mail this week that was like, your website sucks. You know? I was like,
Well, we finally got something called art, and that's still open and up for review as far as I'm concerned. Although I do kind of like the logo you cut out of it.
It actually looks
kind of like that. Do you have a big version of that so I can put it as the album art for the show?
Oh yeah, sure.
Because I don't remember. It was all over Twitter, and it was all the No Agenda people making art, which I love them for it. This one's pretty good. Awesome. I like that. It's pretty good. That
I'm kind of digging it.
What I like about it also looks like a dude leaning forward. yelling, you know, talking and receiving or both ways. Or I don't know. It has a cool
brain. And it kind of looks like a mic, too.
Yeah. It has all that. It looks like an antenna, a microphone. The Big Bob vibrating dildo has a bit of that look to it. You're familiar with the product?
I'm not familiar with the product, but if it looks like that,
it's an outstanding product.
Oh, yeah. You've heard from friends, right?
It's the podcast pounder, everybody. That's our logo.
Nice. Show title.
Okay, you got it. Yeah. I'm writing it down right now.
Let's see. Yeah, that's all he had for this question. But people sending code and just general input is exactly what we want. I mean, that's just perfect for this whole thing, because what we're trying, I think I've said this in emails about five times this week, is we're building this in the open. And what that means is we are building the thing that people need. And if you don't know that people need it, then you can't build it. So otherwise, we're just going to end up building stuff that we want, but that might not be exactly what's needed.
Exactly.
So we got to know those things. Okay, for one, I'll tell you my thing about imposter. Wait, I guess you call them imposter feeds.
Mm-hmm.
You had an idea the other day, and which I liked, and then. So my idea was, just to throw this out there for people to chew on, was what about a set of API endpoints that could help machine learning and AI guys
sort through it,
hook into the index and start finding things that look like imposter feeds. I don't know how any of that works. I'm not an AI guy. All I know is I know we had at least one AI guy that sent us an email that said he was doing something with GPT-3, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did remain. I read that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, what endpoints do you need to make something like that happen? Tell me and we'll put them up there. And if you tell me exactly what you want, we'll give it to you. And then you can start playing around with it. And maybe you can just start surfacing some potential imposter feeds. And then we could put them up on a website. We could list them and shame them, you know? And say,
yeah, absolutely. There could be a whole business just doing that.
Yeah.
Someone could actually have a business just finding crap that you may or may not want to do, stop or intervene or do something. That's a perfect service. Yeah. Service.
Podcast.yousuck.com. And it's just a big list of people who suck.
Yeah.
So that was my idea. I think you had an idea for some surfacing on a website.
I don't remember what it did. I write this? I must have texted it to you.
Oh, you texted it to me.
I don't remember. I don't remember what I said. You got to write that down, man. It's here and gone.
Oh, yeah. You get too many ideas.
True. I'm just looking at the GitHub. It's cool, man. There's a lot of stuff coming in. People are I'm not a developer, but I can see how GitHub, a good GitHub, I can see how it can be a real social thing.
Right.
With great. A lot of interaction. Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
Well, those are the real, those are the things that I see that people can jump in immediately with. And like UI design, if you look at our website, any of them, and it makes you shudder,
oh, please. Yes.
Fix it. Me or you, Adam and I are neither one of us have a design bone in our body. So. You get what you get.
I don't even know what looks good. So it's just, no, nothing at all. When you have a project, this is what I'd like to do. And I've been struggling with a little bit because I just can't keep track of it. Maybe the GitHub is the place. If you got a project like the Mastodon bot, if you got, whatever it is, let's find a place for it on the GitHub. So I can just go in there and I can talk about it on social media and other places where I can push stuff out. I'd like to have a page for, normies like myself that says, oh, look at the cool shit we're doing with this index. So people can just see it. I just need to know what your project is so I can get to it. I can point people to it and I can describe what it does. That would be very helpful for me because I obviously can't do anything. I can't do any of the stuff we're actually talking about.
If you have a GitHub you know, account name, and you just want to shoot it to me and have me put you into the into the teams or whatever, you just email it to me, and I'll stick you in there, and then you can post comments or moderate or do whatever. That's the more the merrier.
Coming back around to publishing, wanted to remind you of that pub sub, something of that nature.
Yeah, well, so web sub is what I'm working web on. Sub. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's pub sub hubbub was the initial spec. Do you remember that?
Yes, I sure do. It's taking me back. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pub sub hubbub, but I think it's been renamed to web sub. It's one of the indie web standards. And if I understand the history right, I think RSS Cloud came before PubSub.
Oh, I think so. I think so. In fact, as would be typical with anything Dave Weiner invents, he has a great idea, does a fantastic implementation, then everybody goes off and does their own version of it, which is...
Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, that's the thing that I think was very destructive for RSS, is when it became Atom versus RSS, and there was all this jihadi stuff about it, all this, you know, just pure religion. It's like, hope we can stay away from that.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because people just don't, looking through the iTunes spec, and it clearly says in the iTunes spec that a valid podcast feed must be an RSS feed. Uh-huh. It's got to be an RSS, not Atom. But I can absolutely tell you 100% that there are plenty of Atom feeds in the iTunes index, and they just parse them.
And they work.
And so, yeah, and they work. So, yeah, the PubSub hubbub or WebSub is what I'm putting in right now. And it's going to be, you know, it's necessary.
And what will that do? What benefit does it give us? What happens with that?
Well, the hub, you have various hubs. I think that's me.
Yeah, there's coming to take you away.
He's chasing the boat. He's chasing the boat. So there are various hubs, of which I know about three off the top of my head. There's Superfeeder. Google has one. And there's one, I think, I forgot the name. One of the podcast network guys run one. And I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head, but I saw it in their feeds. So when you have a hub, the hub becomes the central point for subscribing and for pushing. So then what happens is, if you see a feed that has a hub listed in it, then you can say, you can ping the hub and say, I want to be notified whenever this feed updates. And whenever the feed changes, the publisher of the feed will also ping the hub and say, hey, I just updated it. And then you get the notice without having to crawl it.
Nice.
So you instant notification. Now, the thing that going back, so because Freedom Controller supported RSS Cloud, 10 years ago. And I think that was pre PubSub hubbub, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
And the thing that always, I think it was, the thing that always was a bother, even though it works well, the thing that's always a bother is you never know, am I not getting an update because the feed didn't update, or am I not getting an update because the RSS Cloud Hub is not sending me anything?
Right.
It's down.
Right.
So it's sort of a unfortunate thing that you can't, it's like an argument from silence type of deal where you can't be sure of why you're not getting a ping. So even though you have public web sub up and running, you still have to continue to crawl on the back end.
Of course. Because, right.
So we're going to have it doesn't help you that much, in my opinion, with infrastructure, because you still have to have that infrastructure running all the time. Mm-hmm. But it does help to, with timeliness.
You know what we need? Just dreaming like a nut job. Okay. You almost need like the infrastructure of Bitcoin, where people who are doing the mining, which would be our version of aggregating, somehow get some value out of spitting out that information within the network, and it's distributed. So people are doing these pieces all over the place. I know it's a druggy type comment, but it just popped to mind.
You're talking about proof of work.
Yeah, and proof of work is obviously different from what I'm talking about, but they're doing actual work.
Yeah.
Which in my mind could be aggregation in a distributed format. Not that it's necessary, I'm just throwing it out.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. And the distributed nature is, and that would be so nice to have some, essentially a dedicated network for
aggregating.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be wonderful. And so, but anyway, so the PubSub stuff is something that I'm putting in right now. And it would have been in a week ago, if not for the aggregator, baloney that I had to deal with.
You want to talk about that? 'Cause you went through something fun.
Yeah.
Come on, man. So, come on. Warts and all.
I'll give the quick overview here. So last Friday, I'd added a new data point in the news feeds table. And so what have we been doing so far for the, you know, all these years has been taking the last update out of the channel. And if there's a last update element listed in the channel of the RSS feed, then we hang on to that value. And then as you parse the feed, then most recent item time, the pub date of the individual items themselves, if there's one, if those are listed, which they don't, a lot of times they're not, but if those values exist, then the pub date in the item, the most recent one, overrides the value of the pub date in the channel.
If it's younger.
Well, no matter what, even if it's younger regardless. Or older.
Oh, of course. Okay, gotcha. Makes sense.
Because it's considered authoritative.
Right, right, right.
And the reason is because a lot of RSS generators will automatically update their pub date and last build date timestamps just when you refresh the feed.
So it's server end.
Yes, it's what the definitely fuck? Server. You can just sit there and hit. Yeah, you can refresh 10 times and you'll just get a new timestamp every time.
That's almost like people want to be at the top of the stack by doing that. It almost seems nefarious, like kind of sleazy.
It may not
be meant that way, but.
I don't know. I can't decide if it's on purpose or if it's just that they don't understand the spec. I don't know, but it's some big ones. Like there's a couple of big publishers that do that.
Mm.
So that becomes the pub date in the channel just becomes almost irrelevant.
Right.
At that point.
Right.
So the items themselves, we take that as authoritative, but I still want to hang on to that to the pub date, channel pub date, just because you can use it for comparisons when you're trying to decide if a feed is updated or not. It's just which I have to stop here and just say, aggregating is as much an exercise in heuristics as it is about actually parsing.
Right.
Because yes, this is structured data, but structured data doesn't mean that you get perfect content. Structured data just means that it has to be arranged in a certain way. But the data that you get can still be just garbage. It's just well-structured garbage.
And well-structured garbage that I've seen it kill apps. I've seen all kinds of weird things, even just on an ampersand in a title tag.
You had a bad entity. Character entity that came through in your HTML the other day exporting the show notes and you messaged me.
Yeah, it was stuck. It wouldn't come out.
I mean, I haven't seen that in years, but one bad character was like, boom.
This is, by the way, the nucleus of the Adam Curry, Dave Jones relationship.
My shit's broke.
I'm actually pretty good at breaking everything. If it can break, I'm the guy that's going to find it. Like, oh, I don't know what I did, but I broke it.
That's perfect. It's perfect. I hand you this beautiful thing, and then it's like, okay, here's all the bugs.
Isn't that the user you want, though? The one who breaks everything quickly?
100%. Yeah. Okay. 100%.
Good. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm happy to oblige.
So what I've done is added another data point in the newsfeed table where we could track most recent item time instead of just overriding the pub date value and using that. I just wanted to see them both. So I did that, and in order to have that populate, I'm like, I'm just going to set off a new index of about half half the table that didn't have it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I triggered off the index. It was about 500,000 feeds. Well, going back again, this has been something that I've needed to fix for a long time, is the way the puller and the puller and the parser are two separate things.
Mm-hmm.
The puller, which is called aggravate, downloads the feeds. The parser, which is called party time, I'll put these up on GitHub. It parses the feed, the content out of the feed and sticks in the database.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the puller, when it pulls the feed, it takes the content, the raw content of the feed, and put it in the database too, so that when the parser comes along, it can grab it out of there. And the reason we did that is because if you have multiple servers, it's easier to share. You don't have to start bouncing files back and forth.
Right.
But
so you got into a survival of the fittest mode.
Well, what happens is when you're pushing potentially 20 megabyte RSS feeds, and that's what some of these
20
are.
20 megabyte RSS. Well, there's no rule, I don't think. There's no limitation on size.
No, there's some in the database.
Except how much I could afford serving it from AWS. I learned that lesson. Oops.
I don't know how people get away with having a 25 megabyte RSS feed.
It fucks up everything.
I don't get it. But we had them in there. And so as soon as you start putting in those things in the database, it gets the inserts get really, really slow, and the selects get really, really slow.
Right.
So what happened was overnight, the puller was going faster than the parser, and the parser just couldn't keep up. So I wake up the next morning and the parser is just like
crunched.
It just can't handle it. It's toast.
Yeah.
It's all backed up. So all hands on deck. I had to just re-engineer the whole way those two pieces communicated with each other, and just using files, which is fine. But that means that if you're using files, each aggregator has to have a node ID, has to basically have an ID number, so that they can, so that the other aggregators won't walk all over
them. So they know what's going on
when they're pulling out of the database.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
So that took
a
couple of days.
I'll bet. That must have been fun.
No.
This brings us to a frequently asked question, which we've already partially answered looking at our potential roadmap. People are saying, hey, you guys are nice guys, but are you going to be able to be up for my app? Are you going to be able up for my what I'm offering? Are you going to be able to service me? Guarantees?
Yeah. I mean, I feel good about where we are. There's clearly there's no SLA, there's no guaranteed uptime, but you don't get that through Apple either.
This is true.
You don't get any SLAs from any of these people. If you're picking an index, you're just sort of hanging off that index with your app, there's no guarantees anywhere you go.
Right.
So from that standpoint.
So how are we better?
Yeah.
Are we?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I can't claim that we're going to have better uptime or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's something to talk about in the future as we go forward. If people, I don't know of any other, services that offer SLAs or anything like that. Maybe that's something we could do, maybe that's a paid thing I don't know.
Yeah. I think the long-term answer is obviously distributing that into some kind of DHT or something where it just, it can't go down because it's always there. But Apple, and this is something that's cropped up in the past week or two, a lot of people use iCloud for email. And one of their SMTP servers has been listed on a UBL block list.
Oh, really?
And people, I can't send you email. Now, when Mark Void Zero, when he redid my mail server, he put all that shit in, all the SPF. He said, you want to be on my server? This is how we do it. Do it all. The DMARC, all that stuff. And it's really interesting to see how much fraud, abuse, and bullcrap goes on once you put in all the protocols, which I'm not a proponent necessarily of all of that, but so he also has the block list. And yeah, there it is, Apple UBL block list. So of course, you know, I could put in an exception, but right. You know, Apple should at least have some way to escalate this issue to them. You're not going to do it on feedback.apple.com because no one lives there. I've never seen a living person online from Apple.
No,
but
no.
That's like a huge problem. You know, it's like, come on, man, blocking lots of people.
I'm a sysadmin. I mean, Office 365 goes down, I mean, at least once a month these days.
Yeah.
For an hour or more. So, I mean, in the world we live in, I mean, can we guarantee 100% uptime? No. No, I'm not even going to try to guarantee that. But the thing that we can say is that we care about this service. It's what we're doing what now, we're doing, and people are supporting it. And if it's down, and I can guarantee you that if it's down, I'm working on it. So I think Marco over at Overcast, I think they had some downtime the other day.
Oh, really?
So things are not, when it comes to servers and comes to that kind of thing, things are around 100%, but we do back up a lot. And I would say this, as far as in sysadmin speak, our RTO, our return to operation time is, let's just say if there's a complete disaster, everything is constructed fairly simplistically and it's loosely coupled. So I'm thinking worst case scenario RTO is probably 12 hours. And we could be back up and running on even on a different host if necessary.
I'll reiterate what I said in the first episode. More than 10 years of working with you, everything you've ever built server-based, the downtime has been, in 10 years, maybe 10 times that there's been an issue that was a showstopper issue. And and what the way you construct these things, and I said that on the first episode, is if something's wrong, I know that Dave can go in and 3 minutes later, it's like, couple keystrokes and he's brought something back from the dead which works again. And I know that's the way you construct stuff because you're a sysadmin, a dude named Ben. You're a guy who knows that you've got to get your office back up and running no matter what, even if you have to sacrifice some other features or something just to keep it working. So it's
And I can post those scripts that we use too. Like if they're because each the critical servers will each have a restore from AWS script associated with them. So if we're backing up to AWS, the restore from AWS is basically just a shell script, and I drop in the last backup ID.
Right. Bring it right back.
It sucks it down, rebuilds the server, and like it can be back up and running fairly quickly. Now, the one thing that we're not doing, and this is why I say RTO of like 12 hours, if we're talking about complete disaster, we just lose the database or something like that.
Right.
I'm not backing up the episodes table every,
So those would have to be reparsed.
They basically have to be re-indexed
Re-indexed. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So we'd have to pull them and parse them again. So that could take, that could take half a day.
Well, we're doing something very unique here and it feels like people, not the core. I mean, obviously you have Linux community, you have a lot of cool projects on GitHub, but we're doing something where it's a total throwback. Whenever I tell the story, people who really aren't involved in what I'm doing at that level, they say, oh, it's kind of like the daily source code and what you're doing back then. You're just trying to get everything rolling. I said, yes, exactly. While we are a partnership, an official organized partnership, this whole idea is going back to the origins of how we used to get stuff done on the internet. And that's when everybody on the internet was a de facto a developer. You could not really use it without having some command line skills at minimum. Yeah.
You had to install your DOS driver for your network card.
Oh my God. Oh, that takes me back. What was that other protocol before basically became TCP/IP? What was the,
I know I'm an old Novell guy.
Novell.
And there was another a protocol called SPX.
SPX. Oh my God.
Well, you remember, before SMTP, I think it was a UUID with the mail transfer protocol.
Yeah. User to user.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or was it Unix to Unix or user to user? I can't remember what the acronym was.
I don't remember.
Well, what crap. It was, when I first got on the internet, I had to dial up. into a shell account, fire up a PPP connection, and then open a PPP stack on my Mac, my Mac Plus, with a huge 20 megabyte external SCSI drive. Woo!
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've got SCSI cable still sitting
there. I still have this. I found a SCSI cable the other day. I held on to that, but that it was massive. Huge yeah. box, 20 like, megabytes. It was great.
It's like a freaking, what they called it. We used to have TwinAx for, I don't know if you remember TwinAx. It was,
no.
It's like, it's big. It was a old terminal, terminals for like 5250 terminals for IBM servers. So we had this huge TwinAx. And then we had these two network segments in the office. And if somebody pulled the Terminator off of one of the lines,
oh, you know, right,
the whole thing would fall down.
You had to have the Terminator. Yeah.
The Terminator. Yeah.
Well, then we had the, I remember Apple Talk.
Oh, see, I wasn't a Mac guy then. I was a Windows guy.
You basically plugged a telephone line in.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It had an RJ45 jack. What, 145? Forget what that jack
RJ11.
Was. RJ11. You just plug it yeah. right in. And you had like a little, you do a little ring network at home with yeah. phone line, which it kind of worked. It was interesting.
Did the last one in the chain have to have the Terminator or whatever?
No. At that point, the Apple Talk dongles did all the work, I think. I think. Oh, good times.
That's nice.
So in addition, if you're just someone who has a great idea for a podcast experience, the way a player could work or a widget or an app or some function, send it to Adam at podcastindex.org or Adam at curry.com in that case, but it'd be easier. I can start filtering it so I can keep these ideas separate. And Dave and I will bring it up and we'll see if we can find other people to implement. That's the idea. It is truly the three pillars of podcasting, the podcast creators, the producers who make, and by the way, you can be multiple of these people at the same time. The listener, the audience, who really know what they want, they haven't probably had a place to tell anybody, so we'd like to be that place. And then we have the forgotten man and woman who were bringing this toolbox and this lunchbox to their table, which is the developer of podcast apps. And that's, think back to the, I think I saw Andrew Grummet ping me on Twitter. He was,
really?
Yeah, Andrew was the original guy with iPodder.
Oh, cool.
iPodder Lemon, I think he started. I can't remember anymore, but Andrew eventually went into Podshow with me and helped start all of that.
Oh, that's neat. That's great to have him back in the mix. Yeah. I think like, okay. You know, one of the obvious things that's not there is a public search. We don't have every. If you go through us, you have to sign up as the developer account,
right,
and that kind of thing,
because right,
that's
right.
That's what we're focused on right now. But there's nothing stopping somebody from putting up a podcast index search.
Gosh, wouldn't that be nice to have someone just focus on that
and make it look beautiful and be beautiful?
And like, yes, be beautiful.
I can do it. But it's just going to look
No, you can't. Yeah, and we can't do beautiful. You can do beautiful code, but we suck at design and UI things.
Okay. Perfect example. Was it Transistor? Those guys are great. I worked with Pierre over there to get him to get his API stuff set up. And so their website is beautiful. Transistor guys, I will give you SSH keys into my server if you can make our website look like that, because it is beautiful.
It is. I'm looking at it now.
Like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, that I can't do. So
what is Transistor doing? Are they adding feeds or what are they doing?
They're integrating so they can put, so they can be sure and get listed.
That is a pretty website.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
They have most of the things you need, right down to the icons for subscribing. I mean, they got all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, they're good guys. Yeah, I think they're just adding so they can make sure their guys are listed. But anything like that, if somebody sees that's like, hey, why don't you have so and so? The answer is go build it.
Yes, go build it. Exactly. Exactly. What else do you have, Dave? Anything else on your plate?
It's a long show. I think we're good. I think we can probably talk. I want to talk about the how code relates to the evolutionary argument against naturalism, but we can talk about that next show.
Okay. Can't wait for the cliff notes.
Yeah.
Well, good corporate meeting, Dave. I appreciate it. we'll have the meeting notes out to everybody. Thank you again to everybody who has supported us with your code, with your thinking, with your creativity, and certainly those with financial support. This will definitely keep us going for a couple more weeks without any having to put anything ourselves. It's highly, highly, highly appreciated. Let us know your thoughts. Get on the GitHub. Remember, we're at podcastindex.org. And you can send an email to either Dave or I, even info@podcastindex.org. We'll get to pretty much everybody in our vast organization. And Dave, should we be looking out for something in the next few days specifically that that you're finishing up or you're pushing out?
I'm working on the right now. I'm working on the PubSub stuff, and once I get that finished, I'm going to I'm getting a batch ad feature and a batch ad endpoint so that you can bulk submit feed URLs, but that's going to require a different API permission key permission level. Mm-hmm. And so basically you're going to have to ask for that. So that's meant mostly for the podcast network guys, so that they can batch add their shows and not have to call the API 1,000 times.
Much easier to do it in one blast.
Yeah. And we have there's a Twitter account, Podcast Index.
Oh, good.
And then there's also a blog.podcastindex.org is also the micro blog for, if I add new things that I think, like new API endpoints and that kind of thing, I'm going to blog it there. But it cross posts to Twitter and Mastodon. So if you follow the Twitter or subscribe to the blog feed or Mastodon, any of that stuff, you should see those things come out. Like if there's a new little blurb that I think everybody needs to know about.
Can you put a link on the homepage to the blog?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I can. I think it's on the developer portal, but it's not.
Yeah. Let's put it on the homepage as well. And then I'll start putting some stuff in and I'll post, when the show goes up, I'll post about it right there. So everybody can grab their copy and know about it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do it.
All right. My brother, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. I'm sure we'll be chatting on Saturday or Sunday anyway.
All right, man. Good luck with the shows this weekend.
Thank you. And thank you all for being part of Podcasting 2.0. We are preserving podcasting as a platform for free speech. We'll do it again next week right here on Podcasting 2.0.